Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
There's 40 billion other kids also doing the exact same thing and nobody cares.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
All that stuff that you use for passwords and security is freely available.
With Margaret Abels
and Amy Wilson.
Social media is the new television.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
That's not both me. Those are two different people.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood podcast. This is Margaret.
It's a podcast?
It's a podcast, Amy. Listen, I'm shaking it up. I've had enough of podcasting, and I'm ready to move on to podcasting.
Get the title right. This is Amy, and this week we're talking about, do we share too much about our kids online?
Can I, before we get into that, make another joke that I'm stealing from another podcast that someone was trying to think of podcast names? I think it was the guy who does Maintenance Phase. But he was like, someone should do a history of fish podcast and call it Codpast. And I was like, that's a great joke. So I had to share it here. It's a Codpast podcast. All right, anyway, here's what we're actually talking about today, Amy.
Oversharenting? Are you familiar with this word? It's in the dictionary now.
I don't love it. I don't love the word because it sounds gross to me. But yes, oversharenting.
It's certainly judgy McJudge a lot. And I think we're going to talk about it when it's taken to extremes, but I think it's one of those things that's like, oh yes, I know this. Other very bad parents do this. Not me. Of course not me. I would never share something about my kids that they might not have wanted me to share.
I have a much more Oscar the Grouch take on this, which I will be getting to. And I talk about the gimlet eye, as Amy likes to say. Mine is flaring on this.
Well, I mean, there were two recent articles, which we'll talk about, which everybody was like, it's our favorite thing to do to be like, aren't these horrible parents? And I think there's like shocking lack of judgment on display. But to some extent or other, this is very common. There was a study at the University of Michigan. 75% of American parents were familiar with someone who overshared information about their child on social media. I was like, were they looking in the mirror when you asked them? Because approximately 100% of parents have at some point overshared something about their kid on social media, depending on who you ask, as in the kid.
Agree that everybody does this. And I think this is an issue generally of personal preference. And I think that some of the like stranger danger stuff around this is completely overblown and insane.
Well, not for the articles that were recently out there, but those are extreme situations. That's why I'm like, yes, it's easy to say, like, don't put your kid in an extremely dangerous situation with known pedophiles. Like, don't do that. Okay, that's a very short episode.
For sure. And I think that in general, this is a huge spectrum and the danger of it is probably overstated. That is my point of view.
I think my point of view on this has really changed over. I mean, I've been a parent for two decades and I've been on Facebook almost as long. I come from the past, children. And when my oldest kid was born, there wasn't Facebook yet. It sort of came, maybe there was Facebook, but nobody was using it yet. It came onto the scene when I had, I think, all three of my kids before I joined Facebook. And in the beginning, in the early days of social media, it was like, I'm being a good citizen of social media by telling you as much as possible about myself, by saying yes to every friend request that came along, and by showing everything about my life. That's what we do. That's how we build a better Facebook together. And now, 20 years later, I share very little And my kids also share very little, even though they're constantly on social media, which is an interesting, like I'm an avid consumer.
They're consumers, not presenters.
Yes. I mean, I am a content creator. Again, like I do a podcast, so I do create content. I don't create content very much on Facebook or Instagram for reasons that include some of the things we're going to talk about, but also my kids getting older and not wanting you to do that stuff.
For sure. For sure. So I'm not going to get into my pushback yet because I think my pushback is fairly specific. And I'm going to be asking the hard questions today, Amy. But
okay.
I'm keeping an open mind as well.
I think the only people who don't ever overshare about something on the internet are people who aren't on social media, which I have some friends who aren't. So they're definitely not oversharing because they literally don't have accounts.
Correct.
But that's the only way out. There was a survey that determined 92% of American two-year-olds had some presence on the internet. I'm like, that sounds low, actually.
I want to be convinced of what the problem with that is. So let's go.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start with the easy one. We're going to condemn the really bad people. Definitely not us. Definitely not us. Very good parents. Other bad parents who are oversharing about their kids on the internet. The first one was in Cosmopolitan, just came out. It's by Forteza Latifi. She's written actually a whole series for Cosmopolitan, and I'll put this on there. What's the price of a childhood turned into content? And she interviewed young adult children who, when they were growing up, were part of a family creating content on Instagram. I mean, it's kind of like what John and K+8 used to do, except now it's on your phone instead of on TV.
It was on TV.
Right. That was on TV. And we all, and believe me, you know, I watched John and K+8 and Sister Wives. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you do this to your kids. I say, as I hit yes, start playing me the next episode.
I would like to see right. more of this, please. Yes.
Right. I wasn't really aware of this stuff. So this is professional content creators. Like mommy's job is to be an influencer. And now my job is to come home and perform for this video. And growing up in a time where you didn't really understand that other families didn't do this, and you also didn't really understand that as a child you should be being paid for this content, just like a child actor used to be. You know, you're in the biz, you know about the Jackie Coogan law. Jackie Coogan was a silent film actor who became a talkie film actor. He was in a movie called, I think, The Kid.
Isn't he Yankee Doodle Dandy? That's the one we loved. Yeah.
No, Yuki Dandy. That's Jimmy Cagney.
Oh, all right. I get them confused.
We're talking about Jackie Coogan. Yeah.
So oh, my bad. All right. So he was like a boy Shirley Temple back in the day, let's say.
He was a boy Shirley Temple, and everybody made bank on him except him. Like, he got to be an adult and found out his parents had spent all the money that he made as a child actor. So there's laws in place in Hollywood that they 15% of their earnings, which is not that much.
I couldn't believe that when I was reading these articles. 15%. I'm like, shouldn't it be 70%?
Shouldn't it be? Yeah, it's a trust, and when they're 18, they get it. But until then, and still, child actors, anybody who read Britney Spears' autobiography, are taken advantage of. And so this Cosmopolitan article is making the point that these kids, a lot of them, are being taken advantage of. And again, I feel like it's easy to read that and be like, yes, terrible parent, I would never do that. You know, let's get them. But then also, like, I'm on Instagram a lot, and there are families whose content I consume and love it. And I'm not talking about ones that, like, I'm pretending I ate all your Halloween candy and then, like, laughing while I made you cry on camera. Like, not that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people who show their families' daily lives on the internet that I find interesting, that I enjoy looking at. And I think it's just not so easy to be like, they're terrible and they shouldn't be doing that. Like, okay, except we're all watching it.
And it is the new television. So I recently had a strange experience where one of my children, in a completely random way, had the potential to be in a movie. It kind of came about bizarrely. Spoiler alert, it's not going to happen. But I was at once like, oh my gosh, this would be crazy. They're like asking us, like, are you free to travel to this country at these dates? Like, and we're like, I guess. And I immediately was like, yikes. Like, this is opening the door on a submarine, basically, this experience. That, like, it came out of left field. My kid was sort of seen somewhere like, oh, maybe they would be good for this. They had these weird special skills that went along with the role. This kind of situation. And we didn't get that close, but it was close enough that we were really kind of thinking through, like, is this something we would do? And I think the choice is, I mean, would I have had the strength of character? My kid was really excited about it. It would have meant a lot of money. It would have meant exciting travel. This was like a big, big deal. would I have had the strength of character to say, I actually believe this will be a net negative experience, and therefore I will stand my ground against this net negative experience? Or would I have said, this experience could be a lot of different things. It could be a net positive. It could be a net negative. It's kind of taking this huge leap that we would not take if he just continues to be a normal and completely anonymous kid. And I think that social media is the new television. And would it have exposed a lot to him, this child or any child being suddenly in a movie where they have a big part and they're maybe famous? Also, maybe the movie never happens. There's a lot of variables, right? It's hard to predict. But putting that kid in the spotlight absolutely opens that kid up to wild amounts of criticism, to the dangers of having your face in front of a huge population of people that you don't know and have different, very different motives, right? And so I think that it's a tougher choice than we make it out to seem. That, like, it would also come with a lot of money and a lot of opportunities that our family would never be exposed to otherwise. And those are the kind of choices that people are making. And I think there may be tons of people who set out to be huge social media stars, but it doesn't happen for 99% of the people who want it.
Well, the other article that was a horror read, and which I will link in the show notes, was a marketplace of girl influencers managed by moms and stalked by men. And it's what you were talking about on such a smaller scale, but I understand. Like, this isn't Hollywood money and 3 months on location. This is like 2,000 likes and $300 from a brand that wants your kid to wear their dancewear. Like, it's small change. And yet the mothers, and it was all mothers in this article by the New York Times, it was all girls being shown in like leotards and bathing suits, like posing provocatively as like 9 and 10 year olds. And then their moms posting this, getting a lot of likes, posting a little more, getting a lot of likes. Can I see one where she's doing this and that? And then they start to do these, like, for a monthly fee, you can join our personal chat and you can send me stuff for her to wear and you can make requests and like it, and you can ask her anything and I'll answer. And these moms are being sucked in. And when it's sort of presented to them, like, your kid is being groomed, you know, like, you need to stop doing this. One of the mothers in the article is like, well, I can't. Like, I've built up this whole...
It's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope.
Her followers will go away if I stop posting her in, like, lingerie. Then nobody will pay attention anymore. It's like, well, what does that matter? But the idea that you can say no to people who want to see you is, it's weird. It doesn't occur to us.
I think there are certain things that are out of balance. I would say the, like, child beauty pageant always struck me that way. The kind of, like, toddlers and tiara world of, like...
Yeah, and this is just that now.
Girls very dressed up in makeup, very young, and kind of strutting about. That seems to me like, okay. And it's this strange insular world where... What's fascinating to me about those child beauty pageants is that very few people attend them. It's not like you're famous. It's like happening in convention rooms of Holiday Inns in, like, small towns. It's a very strange, small world. I think that is a very specific category. But I will say, we were talking about this movie role, and one of the things is that my kid looks younger than their age. And so that's apparently good for the movies, because then, you know, you're dealing with an older kid, but they look younger. And then I was out in LA chatting with some people about it casually. And I said, well, the danger is that he's of an age where he might suddenly grow a foot overnight. And then, you know, you lose the role. And someone said, completely jokingly, oh, they have hormone blockers for that. But I mean, I think that what happens is you find yourself very upside down very quickly. Like, wait a minute, we've signed the contract. We're doing this movie. We're being flown on a private jet to this island where we're going to meet this big movie star who's scurrying opposite my kid. Suddenly, like, someone's like, but he has to take hormone blockers because we don't want it. By the way, this did not happen, but I'm just using an example of, like, suddenly you're in the position of saying, I've realized way too late that this is morally compromised and I don't know how to back out of it. I'm not defending this whole industry, but I understand it. I feel like you get lost in something pretty quickly. And now, and you've got, what is that called when you spend the money?
Sunk cost fallacy.
Sunken cost fallacy, right? You've got $40,000 worth of outfits in the closet for Little Miss Peachtree or whatever. I don't know. I think that you get lost pretty easily.
But this is more insidious, right? Because first of all, that was a lot more expensive. So people definitely bankrupted themselves on, you know, Little Miss Junior, whatever.
Correct.
But there were, at least there were some barriers to entry.
There were rewards.
There's a trophy and 40 people saw it and it's in your kid's room. And unless it's JonBenet Ramsey, or they're on Toddlers and Tiara, the rest of us didn't know about it. But these people who are putting their kids on Instagram in provocative poses for $10 a month are creating a digital footprint for their kids that can be used and that lasts forever.
I can come on firmly on the anti side.
Yeah. Of that. All right. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the digital footprint and other secondary results of posting about our kids. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at them. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
So one of my kids is a first year in college, and their friends have recently discovered this podcast, and they thought it was funny. My kid thinks it's funny. Their friends think it's funny, and they're going back and looking at posts. Anyway, that kid resurfaced a post that I had put on Instagram 12 years ago, where I just said something like, my 10-year-old says no way this was an actual TV show. And it was like a silly TV show from the 70s that kid at that time was like, no way you actually watched that. I'm like, yes, I did. That's what was on. And that's what we watched. Completely innocuous. But it just was like, holy cow. Like, my kid is going back through a decade of my content on social media and finding something that they can tag themselves in and be like, this was me. I remember this. And I was like, wow, that's really harmless and no big deal. But wow, that ability is there. And I hadn't really thought about that before.
Yeah, it's intense. And I do think we had a discussion when we started the podcast that this is not a podcast where we talk about our own children. It's not about my kids' dilemmas. It's not about I have a kid who's struggling with this and that. But certainly we talk about our kids kind of, we're struggling with this at my house. We try to keep it very vague, try to keep it, you know, non-informational about our kids. It's one of our kids. But I never heard my mother talk about me and my life. I mean, if my kid wanted to go back through 9 years of content and listen for every time I referenced them, would they all be glowing? And would they, you know, I mean, a mother can definitely say like, oh, you're wearing that. And it's like, okay, you've ruined my month, mom. And so It is definitely, you're leaving more of a footprint than you think.
Yes. And they would have no problem with that. And then they might, like, what they would consent to, and they can't consent as an 18-month-old to you putting their Halloween costume up on Facebook because it's so adorable, right? And I think that's probably fine. But they can't consent. And so at point, you know, we don't have an agreement as a society. Like, at what point is this okay? And at what point should you start taking this down? There was a study. They interviewed 250 sets of parents and children that found that the kids were twice as likely than the grown-ups to say grown-ups shouldn't post information about kids online without their permission. Seems like something I would say yes to in the general and then maybe not in the specific. So I'd have to look at what the questions were. But the kids were way more likely to be like, yeah, they can't do that. And adults being like, I think it's fun to post a picture of my kid in their Halloween costume.
Yeah, I'm just not lit up by this. I think that there are laws that are starting to come about that are at 18, you can demand that your digital footprint is erased.
In Europe, it hasn't happened here yet. So they're proposing legislation.
There's one in some state. I mean, I was just listening to a podcast about it, but there's one that's coming up in California to pass that law. I think some of it is technology changing, right? That, like, it used to be that, like, your boyfriend came over when you were 16 and your mom would be like, look at this picture of Margaret when she was in the dance recital. And you'd be like, Mom. I mean, is it for the whole world? Yes. But I do think, in the same way that my kids have YouTube channels, that I was like, I don't know, should you be on YouTube? It's them screaming at the top of their lungs while playing video games in with their five friends who are all screaming simultaneously. It is unwatchable content. Like this,
but it's also not public, right? You also have the settings set that you have to know the channel.
Oh, no. They're public because they think they're going to be huge YouTube superstars. And I'm like, this is interesting to no one. At first, when they were younger, I mean, they're teenagers now, I was like, oh, you have to keep everything private. And, you know, God forbid your face is on the internet and it will set off a furor of pedophiles in every direction. And now I'm like, oh, this content is useless. Nobody wants to see it. And there are 8 billion kids with YouTube, with crappy YouTube channels that nobody watches because they're terrible.
Yeah. But the kids, I mean, I'm trying to think, yeah, that's not what you're sharing. So I wonder if that's the problem, is like, we're sharing about our kids. They are old enough. I mean, I'm not going to argue that it's great for everybody to have a YouTube channel. I don't really care. But if they're choosing to share content and it's not self-reflective content, it's like, look at me playing Mario Kart, then maybe that's different. Like, here's an example. I saw an example in some of the research I was doing. I'm like, oh, I remember this story. And this is the perfect example. This kid who was so lonely, he cried to his mother that he was lonely and he didn't have any friends on his birthday. And she posted a picture of him, you know, sitting in his room, like, this is my son. He doesn't have any friends. Nobody at school is nice to him. And it's his birthday. Can everybody please, you know, wish him a happy birthday? Cue, you know, The Rock comes to his house.
Like 80 billion, right.
40,000 cards. He's Rock. On TV, you know, like, and her post went viral with him in it. And it did him a lot of good. So they went and interviewed her and him 5 years later to be like, how do you feel about this? And she's like, it was so good at the time. Now I'm like, I'm sorry. Are you embarrassed that I say, like, you're, you know, like a loser who has no friends on the internet? Like, yeah, I said that when you're 11, now you're 16. And he's like, well, I guess that I would rather everybody not know that, but it was true. It is true. And then turns out he's not neurotypical. Like, it's complicating. So in this case, the mother was like, yes, I would do it again, but, and I remembered seeing that content and being like, oh, like, I had a good morning that morning knowing that that little boy was out there and The Rock was like flying to see him and wish him a happy birthday. You know what I mean? But he can't get away from that guy. Like, that is, unless he changes his name, that is, he's ever going to, forever, if you do a search for that kid, that's going to come up on the first page. You can say it's terrible or it's not a big deal, but it's true. That is tied to his identity.
Yeah. And I think that there are kids whose school picture becomes like the meme of like the super dork, you know? There is like the little kid with his fist up who's like a little fat, cute baby with his fist up, and people use that as a meme. And definitely those people give interviews later where they're like, yeah, it's not the best that like my awkward high school picture. But also, people just found that in a book somewhere. Their mom didn't share it. I think the randomness of internet life is a problem, but I'm not sure we have as much control over it as this debate suggests. I would suggest that if you're taking requests from strangers for your kids to perform in any kind of outfit online, you've lost the script at some point. Like that, I'm down with that. I think that, yes, if you want to be 100% safe, you never put your kids online. It doesn't mean that they won't be. Someone I know, there was a bunch of kids making prank calls in a park one day, and someone filmed them to say, like, these awful kids are wasting people's time prank calling them. Those kids may end up on the internet either as heroes or being vilified for making prank calls. I mean, I think that the internet is the wild sea and people get caught up in it in different ways. I think that you can probably make safer choices about how you interact with it. But do I post pictures of my kids on Facebook? And I love seeing all my friends' kids on Facebook and social media. And I guess my settings are not public. I guess my friends only can see them, but they're out there. Like if I posted a picture, we have a friend, Megan from the Mom Hour, right? She has a famous picture where she was at a wedding. She's talked about it on the podcast. She's dressed in a bridesmaid's dress and she's carrying her tantruming toddler, but he's like six, surf boy style. You can picture, like, he is stiff as a board and she has him like she's carrying a surfboard under her arm. And with this kind of grim, determined face, she is, we'll link to it in the show notes. She's walking this kid out of the wedding and it went super viral and it's used all over. It's been used in advertising. People repost it. It's a meme, right? Of like, mom who's had it is she's kind of the meme picture. And she's written a lot about the consequences of that and the frustrations of that and seeing it used in places and seeing it kind of making money for other people and used in ads and all this crazy stuff. But she kind of can't get that genie back in the bottle.
You can't. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, you can't control how stuff is used, including now, like with AI. Like every time you like check your privacy settings, every time you put a picture up on social media, it can be used to create a composite of whatever. Like we're all just signing this stuff away. And maybe it doesn't matter and maybe it does. But what's definitely true is you can't claw back. Something else to consider, right? If you have a kid who at some point their identity doesn't match for gender reasons, for other reasons, my identity now doesn't match that person that you used to post about. It's way harder to erase every trace of that than you would think it would be.
Yeah. I mean, I think I do the risk assessment and I'm like, it's fine. I post a funny picture and I'm like, this was my life on this day. And I understand that there is a very small risk that that picture will become completely out of my control, but I'm just not that interested in it. I'm like, all right.
Well, how about some identity theft? Let's talk about that because that's something we really can watch for. Through social media, I'm giving you the head of digital safety for Barclays Bank. They put out a paper explaining that it is super easy for fraudsters on social media to collect information about us and more importantly about our kids. Like you can play the long game because the digital footprint exists, right? And the data is attached to somebody and then it keeps going. So for your kid who's 10 now and will be 22 and getting a, you know, a credit card in a decade, it is very easy for somebody to have been able to pull from their history of data their pet's name, their first grade teacher's name, where they go to school, their best friend, where they go on vacation, their mother's maiden name. Like all that stuff that you use for passwords and security is freely available on social media if you mine the data. And I'm not talking about like, let me see if I can go figure it out myself. I'm talking about like scrapers can use this stuff too. So, and I think we do share, I've seen people share pictures of their kids in bathing suits with location data explaining like where they live and where the picture was taken.
But tease that out for me, Amy. Like what? Why not? I mean, what's the problem? Like someone's going to see them become so obsessed with their kid that they're going to come to their house and kidnap them? That's never happened in the history of time.
That is what happened. Police got involved.
They got kidnapped?
No, they didn't get kidnapped, but somebody was stalking them. Yeah. Somebody showed up at their school because the person put the school. Why would you?
That's not the same as putting a Facebook, because I think that like people drill it down. That's an Instagram account that is like famous kids, right? And fame and kids comes with a huge amount of risk, right? There certainly are people who become obsessed with people who are famous. There are also people who become obsessed. I mean, you can read stories about people who literally, like there was this long criminal podcast about someone wrote on a political debate, like, you're an idiot or something to someone. And like, they stalked that person for 3 years. Like weird stuff can happen. But I think that the volume of people who are posting pictures of their kids with their school name on their sweatshirt, I do not think there's a huge consequence to that.
Well, there might be, except when there is.
There might be. And there might be, but also someone might pass your kid walking home from school and being like, that kid is the kid for me, and follow them home from school. Like,
sure. But they have to walk home from school, but you don't have to put a picture of them in a bathing suit on social media saying, like, this is the park where we go every Tuesday and Thursday. You just don't. It's a cell phone. Like, just don't do that. You know, you can...
I can't get there. I feel like it's like the fear of like, oh my God, don't ever put your kid's name on their backpack because someone could call them by name and kidnap them. The danger of that is infinitesimal. And like the fear factor around it is too high for me.
But what is the positive of doing it?
Because you know it's your backpack at school. It's super convenient.
No. I mean, forget the backpack. I mean, my kids live in New York City and I never put their name on anything once they were old enough to be going places by themselves for that very reason. But I just think there's no reason to... I just think we have to consider the stuff that we're sharing sometimes because what are we getting out of it? What are we getting out of sharing personal information about our kids that can be used to like steal their identity 20 years later? Like, there's no reason to do it. There's nothing good about doing it.
I have a strong pushback. We'll be right back.
Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is lumen.me, lumen.me, and use the code Fresh at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Do you find yourself staying up until all hours of the night, frantically searching for answers online?
I thought this was just a simple stomachache, but according to Google, it looks like I've got a bleeding ulcer.
Tying yourself in knots by constantly diagnosing yourself and others on the internet?
I knew my child was speech delayed. Right here it says he should have 10 words by 18 months, and he only has 8.
Is the gaping void of search engine-based anxiety sucking you in again and again?
I didn't even know eyeball cancer was a thing, but now I'm like 98% sure I have it.
Try Google Calm.
What? Hey, honey, according to this search, that mole on my thigh, it's absolutely nothing to be concerned about.
With Google Calm, your every internet-based query becomes an exercise in relaxation.
Turns out that new medication I'm taking has no worrying side effects whatsoever. What a relief.
Google Calm makes parenting a breeze.
Guess what, sweetheart? It turns out the fact that our 9-year-old is still having daily temper tantrums is entirely developmentally appropriate.
Google Calm. Search your way to lower anxiety.
Good news! Our house has gone up in value. Again!
From the What Fresh Hell podcast. So, in the summer, we often go to this lake, and there's a dock that my kids dive off of that's like 16 feet in the air. And I get these amazingly cool pictures. You've seen them. They're diving off the dock, right? They're beautiful. Like, the sun is setting. It's kids flying through the air. Like, I love them. And I often put them on Facebook, Instagram. You've seen them. People have seen them. They're my kids in bathing suits. Is that location? Like, there's a guy who does a thing online. He's a TikToker. And you can show him any picture, and he's like, I can tell you where that is. I can tell you where that's happening. I like to share those pictures to be like, look at what we're up to. Like, look at my beautiful photograph. Look at my kids enjoying summer. Like, all my friends see them. I see what all my friends' kids are doing in the summer. Everyone's having fun. So is there any reason to do that? Because I like to share it, and I love the photos, and I love my friends and family to see them. And I don't think the risk of someone seeing those photos and tracking down that location and coming for us is high enough not to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue those pictures are like far away. You can't tell who the kid is. You know, like, they're the kind of picture that I think it is okay to share.
Yeah. I just really think that it's a little bit stranger danger-y, the internet stuff. Is there a chance it will happen? There's a chance a lot of things will happen. But I don't think that putting pictures of your kids up on social media in a sharing way, for me, that danger is not profound.
Well, let's talk about the... At what point do your kids have a say in, I don't want you to post those pictures anymore. They're embarrassing. They're embarrassing when my friends see them at school or show them to me. That has already started to happen with my kids. Like, we did not do a Christmas card this year. We do, at least in the Northeast, we do Christmas cards. We do beautiful family photos that we send around. And I'm not putting these on social media. I'm sending them to, you know, a couple hundred of our closest family and friends, certainly. And my kids, like, vetoed it. Wouldn't do it. I'm like, well, I don't want to send, like, a card with Santa on it to the couple hundred people. That seems like a lot of work. So I guess I'm not doing this year. But my kids actually were like, no more. I don't want a, like, picture of us that you think is cute. I don't want to participate in this. I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't know when... I think it's something we don't think about when we give our kids a vote.
I think they get a vote. And I do know people who've had situations where people have posted stuff on Facebook like, Joey has his first girlfriend. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not my girlfriend. That's a girl I talked to twice. Like, don't put that on Facebook. Like, I think as kids, and I used to post a lot more when my kids were younger. And I have a kid who wears kooky outfits. And I was always like, these are hilarious. Like, they're making me laugh. Let me share the joy of, like, this person's daily ridiculous getup and stuff. And I probably wouldn't do that with a 13-year-old in the same way I would do it with an 8-year-old. And if the 13-year-old came and said, people found these pictures and they're embarrassing me, I would take them down. I would say, okay, we'll just delete them. And, like, yeah, I can't scrub them forever. But again, like,
you can't scrub them forever, but, and hopefully it wouldn't matter. Hopefully that kid, some picture 5 years from now, doesn't become like the internet meme of the week. And it probably won't happen. And that you're taking that in teeny, teeny, tiny, small chance. And it's probably fine.
For sure. And like, if it does happen and your kid's mad at you, they probably have every right to be mad at you. But I think that it is part of our social custom to share our kids on certain social media platforms in a way that I feel comfortable with. And everybody has different... This is the other thing. I'm not telling anybody what to do. If you want to stay completely off the internet, it's fine. I just think as a discussion, I am resistant to anything that feels fear-based and not totally accurate in terms of, like, risk versus reward. Like, the kind of stranger danger stuff, I feel overall, there's not a tremendous amount of risk from it. And that is my choice. And that is the choice I choose to make. If you want to be 100% safe, yes, you have to keep all information about your kids off. We were pretty aware when starting a podcast, when we talked about our own lives, to say our husbands didn't consent to this, our kids didn't consent to this. And to the degree that we talk about them, we try to keep it very nonspecific. Like, I think that makes sense. We are. And also, we're making money from this podcast, and they didn't consent to it, and they're not getting money from it. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into how you choose to interact and put your kids out there. And yeah, I would say in the 5 years ago, I was posting pictures of my kids weekly, and now I post pictures of my kids almost never.
And I think our kids are doing that. This is what's so fascinating to me, like getting back to what I was saying in the beginning about my kids are avid users of social media platforms, but they post something like every 6 months. Or they probably have, which is very, I think, healthy, and I don't want to know, they have their private story that they share with five people and that kind of thing. But in terms of what they're showing the world, it's very curated and it's very cautious and it's just very thought out and it's just very a little bit at a time. And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think there is a bright line as I'm talking between making stuff for money, even if it's a small amount of money, and like sharing pictures of your vacation on Facebook. I think they have two different purposes. They have two different everything. I think it gets much sketchier when you're doing it. And I mean, family vloggers, I don't know. I mean, I think certainly I've made video content regarding the podcast that my kids were in because I was like, oh, this would be funny. And it's about the kid and they're in it. And
but they're playing a character. You're not like, here they are, you know, having a stomach bug.
They're playing a character. It's not like here's their first date and getting dressed for. But still, like, I mean, not that we made money off of the videos, but you know what I mean? Like it was content. And so I guess it's a little bit of a slippery slope. But I think that you have to be careful of like the fear mongering around it. And then you also have to be careful of the letting it change the dynamic of your relationship. And when my kid was thinking about doing this movie thing, I mean, the number one thing I thought is you can't participate in this without it changing the trajectory of your life. And you can't participate it without suddenly, if this person is the biggest breadwinner in the family, it changes their relationship with parents. It changes everything, you know?
I have been such, just to say, put a penny in the jar of like the content that's shared online. There's such good parenting content. This is our life with nonverbal autism in our house. This is what it looks like. This is how we do it. This is how our life looks like with this. This is how I'm teaching my kid to sign, whatever it is. I love that content. I am an avid consumer of that content. It's taught me so much. I think it's really doing a huge service to a lot of people, the content that people create when you're like, I'm part of this group and come be part of my community if you're like me. I mean, it's kind of like what we've done on a more maybe broadly based way. I think it's so valuable. So it's not never a good idea. That's what's so hard.
No, and I think people would push back and say this kid with certain needs can't consent to their story being told. Like there's a lot of, it's kind of a prism, and I think it's hard to land on. Like these are the rules of social media engagement. But I think that in 2024, I feel like I get a lot of peace from not fighting things that are absolutes. And I feel like social media and the way we share is kind of an absolute. And I'm just not lit up by, oh my gosh, don't share pictures of your kids. It's super dangerous.
If you want a funny example of like clawback and how it can be hard, if you go to Apple Podcasts for this podcast and you look at our host pictures at the bottom, I managed to change mine away from one that was truly terrible. But like our pictures, I don't know where they pulled them from. Like they're just pictures from past versions of us and we cannot get them changed. And I'm fighting with Google right now about if you look up, I mean, Amy Wilson is a common name, right? Which is kind of good in this day and age, but it's created like a Frankenstein composite of Amy Wilson that I host this podcast and I'm also a rodeo queen and I'm trying to contact them and be like, that's not both me. Those are two different people. And I didn't write that book and that's not. And Google's like, nah, we know best. It's like, nope, we've put this together and this is who you are, we've decided. It does get away from you. And those are stupid, you know, non-important examples, but
yeah, for sure. It's also a bit of a numbers game. Like it's the thing of, I'm afraid that my adorable kid goes on YouTube and suddenly becomes 4,000 people watching them. And I forget that there's 40 billion other kids also doing the exact same thing and nobody cares.
There was one bit of advice that I thought was good as a takeaway. Paula Kokoza, she wrote an article for The Guardian, and she suggested that just like we talk about the birds and the bees with our kids, to use her term, that we also have a sort of a digital rule book chat when the kids get to a certain age. These are our rules about sharing. This is what we do and what we don't do. I'm quoting her. We are the first generation of parents and children to negotiate this path. The dilemmas are shared dilemmas. It's a moment of overlap. And then we should be intentional with our older kids about this.
And I like the word dilemma there because I think that's the key. Like it's not a place of hard and fast rules. It's a place of, because it's very, what's the word? It's fluid, right? Like, okay, I post a picture of my kids so that, you know, my uncle in Delaware can see it and be like, ah, oh, the kid's growing up nice. Like, that's 9 billion times a day. And then if that kid suddenly blows up and something, you've got another conversation. But I think there are basic rules going in about how we set privacy settings and talking about how things last for ourselves and our kids. And the Rubicon of these kids are passive participants to their active participants, which I'm saying is 12 or 13 generally, where suddenly, oh, Bobby has a huge, his huge first pimple. Like that has a really different outcome for Bobby at 13 than it did at 7 when it was cute little Bobby. And now at 13, Bobby's like, yo, all my friends are seeing this and stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And they will go back and look, as I've learned. And like I said, in my case, it was pretty harmless, I think. But yeah, the history, I learned firsthand that the history is long of this thing I did not remember posting more than a decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Forever. Forever. And listen, don't come at me and be like, you're dead wrong. I mean, you can come at me if you want, but I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you where I've arrived at my own comfort level.
These are some things you might take into consideration as you navigate this dilemma on behalf and with your children.
Correct.
We solved it.
Solved it as usual, Amy. Speaking of social media, are you following us wherever we are on social media? We're on Facebook at What Fresh Hellcast. Our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/WhatFreshHellcast. That's the place you want to be. And we're on Instagram at WhatFreshHellcast. You can find us everywhere. Look,
we're on YouTube. We're on TikTok.
Go to WhatFreshHellPodcast.com if you're like, I haven't found What Fresh Hell every single place I want to. We're linked everywhere, people. We are on right. The socials. But you know what's not there? Pictures of our kids.
Massive digital footprint of us.
Wait until you see the picture of me at my 11th grade prom. Now that, if that went viral as a meme, Amy, it would be the end of my social life forever.
I am 100% for sharing embarrassing pictures of yourself as an adult from when you were a kid. That's always allowed.
All right, friends. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.